You are now listening to the Unshakable Health Podcast with Dr. Thomas Hemingway.
All right.
Welcome back. Another week, another amazing day. It's a great day for a great day. I am pumped. I'm so grateful you're here with me, sharing, learning, loving. Just tickles my heart that every time I hear from you all to be able to get a review and read that, see what you're loving and learning. So if you haven't already done that, please hop on over there to Apple and scroll down to the bottom where you see those five stars. Click on the one farthest to the right and then drop a review. I'd love to see it, read it. If you're on Spotify or other platform, at least rate it for me. It just really, really helps move the needle to get this word out of this important, important, solid, science-backed information, which will move the needle in your life so you can thrive and not just simply survive life. Right now, I'm just so grateful for each and every one of you. I've had so much support with many of you, thousands, in fact, buying my book, Preventable, Five Powerful Practices to Avoid Disease and Build Unshakable Health. In fact, I'm going to read a quick review I got over there on Amazon. It says, KGR, five-star verified purchase, Preventable. It was a very motivating read. I really enjoyed reading Preventable. The newer research Dr. Hemingway presented motivated me to get back on a healthier track. Everyone seems to be getting lazy after a while of trying healthy ways, and Preventable for me has been a great motivation tool to help me return to better, healthier ways. Thank you so much, KGR, for dropping that review over there on Amazon. And if you've grabbed the book, please, please, please review it. We've had thousands and thousands of folks grab the book and only like 30-something reviews. Come on, people, let's do this. It tickles my heart. It keeps me motivated to keep sharing this out on this free, available to everyone podcast each and every week. And when you drop that review, it just helps increase the visibility of both the podcast over there on Apple and wherever you get it. And as well on the book on Amazon, if you can drop a review there, it will just tickle me. I promise I read everyone. And there's going to be a few lucky folks who will get a free signed autographed copy of my book because they have dropped a review. I'm going to be doing a drawing coming up this weekend. I'm going to give away a couple copies of this here book, Preventable, that I'm holding up for all those viewing on YouTube. One of my just life missions is to help you to thrive and not just simply survive life and to be able to avoid the common killers, because 7 out of 10 of the most common causes of death present day, not just in the US, but worldwide, are almost entirely preventable. And that's what I explain in the book, 5 Simple Ways, things that you can do on the daily for free to not only optimize your day and your life and get you energized and juiced to have that energy to accomplish your goals, missions, and dreams, but also help you to thrive and avoid those common killers, because they're out there and they plague society today. So grab the book, Preventable, and drop a review, please, if you've already gotten it over there on Apple for the podcast or on Amazon. So thank you so much in advance. And right now, today, we are coming into an amazing podcast, which is kind of a follow-up on one I did, oh my goodness, it's been over a year ago, on Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, these weight loss drugs. I did a little, maybe an hour-long podcast on it back in the day, but there's been many questions that have come up because these drugs are so much more popular now than ever before. So I wanted to drop in and kind of do an update on the weight loss drugs, Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, and what the heck happens to your physiology when you take these drugs, and do you gain weight when you stop them? What does the data show? Well, cut to the chase, high level, overwhelming majority of folks who stop these agents, yes, sadly, do gain weight. Like 90 some odd percent of them gain weight, and most of them regain it fairly readily when they stop the drugs, which is music to the ears of the pharmaceutical companies, right? Because they are stoked, because what that means is they got a lifetime customer. But it's tough, because especially if you're just buying these things and you don't have insurance, it's like $1,000 or more per month to be able to take these types of medications. And so I'm not a fan of really lifetime medications of any kind, if at all possible. I favor lifestyle modifications, because many of which can actually move the needle as much, if not more, and can do it for the long haul. And there's definitely indications for these medications. I'm not making light of them. I think they serve a true purpose and they can be very effective in patients, for example, with type 2 diabetes, which is what they were originally studied in, right? That's the original indication for these medications is for type 2 diabetes because they improve glycemic control and reduce A1C. And they noticed that some of these folks were also losing weight. So ding, 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 the light goes off. The pharmaceutical companies are like, hey, wait a minute. Maybe we can increase our market share. Maybe we can prescribe, sell, you know, get these meds out to folks that don't even have type 2 diabetes because they could lose weight and they're going to be pumped. And then they probably knew this all along, but now the studies are just starting to show it. I'm going to show two of them today, which are recent, which show that you will gain the weight back. You will gain weight after stopping these medications, which, duh, it's not awesome for you. It's pretty cool for them because, like I said, they have a lifetime customer. And so we're going to get into that. We're going to get into the mechanisms. We're going to get into how that happens. We're going to get into how you can avoid that. Even if you are somebody that has to take these medications for a time, maybe it's to get your type 2 diabetes under control or what have you, how you can comfortably come off of these medications and not gain all the way back. So we're going to talk about several things. Let's just jump on into it. What the heck are GLP-1A agonists? Well, they are basically a synthetic-derived GLP-1, which is glucose-like peptide. So they're a peptide. They're a protein, basically, that is synthetically manufactured that we make naturally. So you can make your own GLP-1A agonist right in your own body. You don't need to take a pharmaceutical. You can actually make your own. And what's interesting is there are certain practices as well as dietary things that can increase the production of your own natural innate GLP-1A. And this isn't being talked about, right? So what's interesting about the GLP-1 agonists such as Ozempic and Wegovy, which are actually both semaglutide, they're the same exact medication. This is not only sort of the Me Too scenario, but the same company wanted to release the same semaglutide for a different indication. That's for the weight loss portion. And so that's the Wegovy. And it's the same identical medication, but it's dosed a little higher. They do really high doses for this. And they somehow get to call it a new name. And so most of us have no idea. We're like, oh my gosh, it's a new drug. It's actually the same exact thing, produced by the same manufacturer, same drug, same exact thing, but it's just a higher dose. That's Wegovy. You also have Mounjaro, which is also a similar agent, which is also a GLP-1A agonist. And that one in specific is also being, you know, not only used for type 2 diabetes, but it's being used for weight loss. And there's some new studies on that, which not super awesome. Not super awesome. And so I'm going to get into those today. I'm going to share that out with you because I think it's important. I think it's important. Mounjaro is tirzepatide. And there actually is a really recent study, December 11th of 2023, that just came out from JAMA, the Journal of American Medical Society. And it's talking about what's called the SURMOUNT-4 randomized controlled trial. And this is scary, scary stuff because basically what they found, and it's not the first time, there's another study that I'll share with you, which many have already heard of about Ozempic and these GLP-1A agonists that folks, yes, they do sadly gain weight after. But this also is with Mounjaro, which is the tirzepatide. And so what they found is that after 36 weeks of tirzepatide or Mounjaro, they found that when you stopped, that you would regain 75% of that weight back. And it was within a relatively short time. It was crazy. It was like less than 6 months, you regained 75% of that weight back. I mean, this is nutty stuff. I mean, that is not awesome. And folks that, you know, lost the weight, I mean, they're pumped, they're stoked, they're happy. And then as soon as you stop that med, within a few months, 75% of that weight came back. Like, this is crazy, crazy stuff. And like I said, it's probably music to the ears of the manufacturer of the Mounjaro because it makes a lifetime customer. People don't want to regain that weight. And we're going to talk about how that happens and get into it. And first of all, let's just refresh our memories. What the heck are these GLP-1A agonists? So in the body, we produce them naturally, typically in the small intestine, as well as the pancreas. It's a peptide, which acts like a hormone. So in other words, it goes and sends a message. Most of the time, what's interesting is these messages, like I said, are in the gut. So in the gut, these GLP-1A agonists that are natural that you produce, that glucagon-like peptide 1, goes to the receptor sites and it does a few things. One is it goes to the pancreas and says, hey, let's make more insulin so that we don't have this big spike in glucose after a meal. And that's exactly what they've been shown to do. They help trigger insulin release. So you see less of a spike in your blood sugar after a meal, which is a good thing. We don't like these big blood sugar excursions because they help cause this very, very common problem of insulin resistance that 92 or 93% of us now, present day in the US, we have this. It's crazy, crazy stuff. And most people basically use insulin resistance as synonymous with metabolic dysfunction. And it's one of the issues of metabolic dysfunction. We'll see if we get into any of the others, but it's a very common way of describing metabolic dysfunction. And I would like to use the example of type 2 diabetes, because what happens with type 2 diabetes is not that the body can't make insulin. The body actually makes more insulin than ever before. In fact, if you measure the blood insulin levels of a type 2 diabetic, even one who is not on any insulin medications, their levels are way higher than the non-diabetic, because what happens is they develop what's called insulin resistance. So they are making insulin like crazy. It's just not really working that well. And the problem with obesity, as I've shared in other podcasts, is it is a pro-inflammatory state and it is a state of insulin resistance. So if you took the blood levels of an obese patient, even if they don't have type 2 diabetes yet, because most of them will get type 2 diabetes eventually, they have very elevated insulin levels. Also, interestingly enough, if you measured their GLP-1A in the blood, their levels would also be higher than the average person, because not only are they getting insulin resistant, but they're getting GLP-1A, those analogs, those natural hormones in incretin, we call it in the body, those natural hormones that you're producing to help you decrease your own blood sugar after a meal by secreting insulin. They also delay the gastric emptying, so they slow down that process. So a lot of people who take the synthetic ones like Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, they get nauseated, or they get this feeling of fullness and satiety because this food just kind of sits around in their gut, in their stomach, in their small intestine, way longer than normal. And in the first days, weeks, months, you may think, oh, this is just a side effect, big deal. But actually, over time, it can actually lead to paralysis of these important muscles in the GI tract that propel your food along. And you can get this problem called gastroparesis, which is not only a slowing, but literally like a paralysis of your stomach and intestines to not be able to transport food. And it can be disastrous, like absolutely disastrous. If you've ever known anybody that's had gastroparesis, it is life-altering in a bad way. I mean, these folks are in the ER all the time getting IV hydration, getting anti-nausea medicine IV because they feel like total garbage because they're always so nauseated and they can't really eat anything. And that's kind of one of the reasons these work for weight loss, because people are nauseous. They don't feel like eating, right? And that's because of this delayed gastric empty, but also they send a signal to the brain to like satiate, curb hunger. They're like, ah, we're not hungry. We don't need this. And what's really, really interesting, and I was alluding to this, is that if you take a blood sample of a person who's obese, like I said, they'll have very high levels of insulin already because they're getting insulin resistant, whether or not they have type 2 diabetes yet or not. They will also have elevated levels of the GLP-1A or incretin in their blood as well, the natural levels, even if they're not on one of these medications. What's interesting is that a normal human, most of these hormones, the GLP-1A that's produced naturally, the incretin, stays in the gut, stays in the GI tract. That's where it's produced, right? It's released in the small intestine, goes to the pancreas and the liver. It blocks glucose formation and release from the liver, blocks glucagon, increases the release of insulin, and that helps improve your blood sugar, right? That's a good thing. But what happens when you take these things synthetically, they're actually a little bit different. In fact, they, you know, you're injecting them so they get into the bloodstream readily, whereas the natural ones mostly stay in the gut. Maybe only 10% of it gets into the bloodstream, and those go to the brain and affect the satiety signals and so on. But if you inject them, not only is it getting into the blood, which raises the concentration significantly, so it makes your chances of being resistant to the GLP-1A very, very probable, which makes you kind of, in the long term, dependent upon these super high levels that you can only get from the medication, the injection, because the levels are way higher than the natural physiologic levels, 10, 100,000 times, very much higher than what you would have in your blood physiologically because you're injecting them. And also, they're not only high because you inject a high dose into the subcutaneous tissue, gets in the blood very readily, but also they often have either a change at one of the sites that makes it resistant to the body, breaking it down, so they just stick around longer, or sometimes they even have an inhibitor, which is pretty interesting, that actually blocks the breakdown. So typically in the body, the GLP-1 is degraded by an enzyme. It's called dipeptidyl peptidase. And you don't have to remember that, but it's dipeptidyl peptidase 4, DPP4. And that basically breaks it down so it doesn't sit around forever. And that's how it's supposed to be, right? You're supposed to just release it when you're eating. It's in response to that process of digestion. However, the synthetically produced GLP-1A agonists, they can evade that effect by that DPP4 enzyme because they're often administered with an inhibitor to that enzyme. So they stick around for a long, long time. And so, you know, superficially, the docs, you know, and I don't blame them. They just know what they know. And they, a lot of them don't take a lot of time to really read up on what's actually happening in the physiology. They just know that they, quote unquote, work for diabetics because they keep the insulin being secreted all the time. They don't get degraded. This GLP-1A agonist, like I said, it evades that dipeptidyl peptidase 4, the DPP4 enzyme that breaks it down. And so it sticks around in the blood a long, long time. So it increases the insulin production and lowers the glucose levels over a long period of time. So if you're type 2 diabetic, that can be really, really helpful. And I have in my family, not my daughter, she's a type 1 diabetic, but another family member who's a type 2 diabetic who takes one of these medications. And it has really helped with the blood sugar, with the A1C. But there have been side effects. And I shared this on the initial episode, and side effects that alarmed me. One was that this person lost like 30 pounds, but half of that, 15 pounds of it, was muscle. Like, that's not good. Muscle is not only one of your most, if not the most, metabolically active tissues. You want to get metabolically healthy. The solution is not to take one of these medications to lose muscle, because muscle is literally the organ of not only metabolic health, but of longevity. And this person I'm concerned about because they're losing muscle mass, even though the numbers, you know, if you check the A1C, you check their overall blood sugar, it's better, but losing the muscle mass, I can tell looking at him that he's lost. Like, if you look at his face, it's all thinned out. And you guys have heard of that Ozempic face thing. Well, that's a real deal. And it's not awesome. Like, most of us are trying to add, you know, fullness to our face or keep that face looking youthful and vibrant. And when we lose the muscle in our face as well as fat, it looks kind of old and shrunken and shriveled. And, you know, most of us don't like that. It's not awesome. But that's actually happening because of both fat loss and muscle loss. And that's happening everywhere in the body. In fact, some of the first data that I was aware of with respect to this was a series that came from Dr. Peeta Attia. And if you've read his book called Outlived, it's an amazing book. It talks all about some really amazing practices on how you can live long and live an amazing life. And I'd recommend it. It's a little long. It's kind of like my book used to be, like 800 some odd pages before I lost the entire manuscript. And then I rewrote it, kind of simplified things a bit, made it a little bit more user-friendly. But his book's amazing. He, in his practice, hundreds of patients, he's seen when he's used these agents that folks have lost almost 50% of their body weight in their muscle mass. So if you lose 50 pounds, 25 pounds fat, 25 pounds muscle. And effectively, when that happens, I know it sounds crazy, but you would be fatter than you were when you started. In other words, your body fat percentage would be much higher after that 40-pound weight loss. I can't remember if I said 40 or 50, but half of that would be muscle, half of that would be fat. And at the end of that, whether you lost 40 or 50 pounds, you would actually be more fat than you were when you started, in the sense that your body percentage of fat would be higher than it was when you started because you lost significant muscle mass. In the best case scenario, and the folks that do this really, really well, I've seen series where their patients lose only about 25% of the weight in muscle. And that's still a lot. I mean, think if you lose 40 pounds, the average person who gets on Ozempic and these similar medications can lose up to about 30 or even up to 40 pounds in a year or so. If you just lose 25% muscle, that's 10 pounds of muscle. Have you ever seen 10 pounds of ground beef on a kitchen counter? Like, that's a lot of ground beef. That's how much muscle you would be losing, 10 pounds in the best case scenario, if you only lost 25% of your muscle mass with that weight loss. Most people are losing closer to 40 or 50%. There's another doc by the name of Dr. David Brown out of Idaho. He has a clinic over there, and he's seen his patients lose 40 to 50% of their weight loss in muscle. And he's super worried and concerned and alarmed about that because nobody's talking about that. And losing muscle mass is not awesome. And that's part of the reason why when these medications are stopped, you're going to gain that weight back, because muscle is your friend with respect to metabolism. It is so metabolically active. It burns calories even while you're sleeping. And so even when you're doing nothing, because it is highly metabolically active. So if you're losing muscle with these agents, whether it be 25% of your weight loss or up to 40 or 50%, none of it is good. And I've not seen a single study that's looked at long-term results from these GLP-1A agonists that has reported zero muscle loss. Just haven't seen it. Like I said, the ones that are the best are those that are reporting only about 25% of the weight is lost in muscle. But even that is not a good thing, like this 10-pound example that I just shared with you. It's just not awesome. And that's why it's so hard when you come off to be able to keep the weight off, because you're way less metabolically active than you were before because you've lost a bunch of muscle. You've lost a bunch of muscle. So your quote-unquote metabolism is much slower than it was before. And this is on account of losing muscle. It's also on account of this whole theory of losing weight by caloric restriction, which these medications, they are prompting and they are supporting and they are causing caloric restriction. Why? Because if you're nauseous all the time and you feel like crap and you feel like your stomach is full all the time and you can't really eat, well, guess what? You're not going to eat much. Like this family member of mine, he was telling me what he eats in a day. And it is so little. It is like less than 1,000 calories a day because he has no appetite. And the appetite and cravings that he have, sadly, are for junk food. Like he likes these, I think it's like a, did he tell me it was the nachos at Taco Bell or something, which are horrible. Like that's all he craves. And he eats one of those a day and like one Egg McMuffin at McDonald's or something. That's like the whole caloric intake that he has in an entire day. Like it's probably about 1,000 or 1,200 calories, which is why he's lost a bunch of weight. He's lost over 30 pounds. But sadly, unless he stays on this forever, which is not going to be awesome, and I'll explain a couple other reasons why besides the muscle loss, the weight gain is going to come back. And so here's another issue. So as I mentioned kind of at the outset, when you take these medications, they kind of circumvent the usual channels of the GLP-1A in your body. Most of it normally when you're not taking the injections, or there's even a pill form, maybe you've heard of it, which is also semaglutide. It's a pill form that you can take that these get into the blood and into much, much, much higher levels. And they bypass the normal dynamics of these transport connections, what we call the endocrine system, sort of the text messaging system of the body, if you will. When you inject them and they get into the blood in the very, very high levels, they go to the brain straight away and they are telling your brain, hey, I'm not hungry. I don't want to eat anymore. I'm full. I'm nauseous. Like, you know, you just don't have the urge to eat. And that's why people are gaining weight, right? They're eating less calories. But the usual process is these get secreted into the small intestine and they operate locally in the GI tract primarily. Only about 10% of it gets into the bloodstream. And that 10% of it also can go to the brain and it can affect your satiety hormones and things like that, but at a much lower level. And that's through this connection between the gut and the brain called the gut-brain axis, which is primarily through the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve is a very, very important nerve. It's the most important nerve of that nervous system called the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the most important for our overall longevity, our being able to thrive in life. Like you guys have heard of that measure called heart rate variability. You know, a lot of these smart watches like the one I have here will monitor that. And that's kind of how they say how well you slept by your heart rate variability. Well, not surprisingly, when you take these medications, all the GLP-1A agonists, guess what they do? Well, they decrease heart rate variability. And they do that because they are circumventing, they are bypassing the normal channels instead of acting locally at the gut and then a small amount going to the brain. They basically skip the whole gut-brain axis. They get into the blood and they go to the brain directly. So they're skipping that whole vagus nerve bit, the gut-brain, the second brain, the gut-brain axis. They skip that whole bit, go straight to the brain, and they interact right then and there because of the hugely high concentrations. And they make you very resistant, kind of like insulin resistance. They make you resistant to the GLP-1A, and so you need higher and higher doses. So that's why when you stop, you have big, big problems because your body is used to these super, super, super high doses, and it's cutting out the normal physiological loop, if you will, that involves this very important nervous system called the vagus nerve and the gut-brain axis, the enteric nervous system. You're bypassing that whole thing. And when you don't use something in the body, you've heard of the old dictum, right? Use it or lose it. Well, in this case, you're not using that enteric nervous system. You're skipping that whole connection and you're going to lose it. And that is actually shown in these examples of the gut paralysis called gastroparesis, which is a life-threatening issue that people are having due to these medications being used for long periods of time. It's basically skipping this normal connection between the gut and the brain and this nerve called the vagus nerve, and their gut is getting paralyzed because they're not using it. They're not using it. And it's really a terrible thing for the long term. Like I said, the gastroparesis, if you've ever met somebody that has it, it is life-altering in a bad, bad way. It's terrible, terrible. And also in the sense of what I was sharing with heart rate variability, the parasympathetic nervous system, which is so important to keep us healthy, to keep us able to recover, especially nowadays, there's so much stress out in the world. Like the way that we can respond and be able to do so in a positive way is through this parasympathetic nervous system. We got to strengthen that muscle or system, if you will, or we'll lose it. And when we use these medications, you're skipping it. And so it is atrophying and it may cause the gut paralysis, like I said, the gastroparesis, and it may cause even further problems down the road. And it is bad. Like I said, it's clearly measured. You can look it up. If you take it, it will decrease your heart rate variability, which is not awesome. In fact, I'm just going to share another study here that looks specifically, I kind of mentioned one at the outset that looked at the Mounjaro, which is the tirzepatide, where folks were regaining up to 75% of their weight back. The other one that most people are familiar with because it's been around a little bit longer is reported with mostly looking at, it says it's entitled Weight Regain and Cardiometabolic Effects After Withdrawal of Semaglutide, and that's Ozempic and Wegovy, the Step 1 Trial Extension. That was published in 2022 in Diabetes and Obesity and Metabolism. And what they found, which was interesting, is that when the treatment was discontinued, this was over a year in, they found that the folks that had to stop, you know, based upon they had some folks stop and then some folks continue, they had folks regain 12 out of the seven. They had about a 17% weight loss initially. They regained 12%. So this was slightly, slightly better than the other study. But they basically regained 70% of the weight as opposed to the 75 in the one that was looking at the tirzepatide or the Mounjaro. Still not awesome when they're gaining all this weight back. And they also not only regained the weight, but they lost the cardiometabolic improvements that they got. They reverted back towards baseline. In other words, their hemoglobin A1C, their overall inflammation, their cardiometabolic risk factors, all were kind of returning to baseline from prior to starting. So they conclude 1 year after withdrawal of the once weekly injections of semaglutide, which is the either Wegovy or the Ozempic, Participants regained two-thirds of their prior weight loss with similar adverse changes in their cardiometabolic variables. So findings confirm the chronicity of obesity and suggest ongoing treatment is required. In other words, you got to be on these drugs for life, for life. Like, what the heck? Who wants to be on anything for life? Certainly not me, and I think not most of you, but like I said, if you're paying $1,000 a month, I mean, whatever it is, the drug companies, they are pumped. They are stoked. They are excited if you are on their medications forever, but it's not awesome. And so let me talk about a couple of simple and easy things that you can do to be able to avoid this. So number one is get metabolically healthy. Well, how do you do that? I can't see a better way, number one, than eating real food. So I've talked about this ad nauseum, not going to belabor it here today, but eat real food, single ingredient whole foods. And if you avoid the big three that I always mention, the highly processed grains and flours, that's one, highly processed sugars, that's two, and the seed oils, anything that's highly processed, these so-called industrial oils from the soybean oil to anything, canola, grapeseed, vegetable oil, anything that's highly processed, avoid it and only use the natural ones like avocado oil, butter, you know, ghee, tallow, and olive oil and palm oil. Coconut oil is actually one of my favorites. These are the natural oils, which basically you can make process just by squeezing, just by simple pressure. All the others that are called vegetable oils are crazily amount of processing, high temperatures, high pressure. You have to do all kinds of extractions. You have to bleach them out because they're rancid when they're finished. Like, it's crazy, crazy stuff. They cause tremendous inflammation. So you avoid those big three, the highly processed grains, highly processed sugars, and the seed oils. You're off to a phenomenal start. The next biggest thing I really feel like is you got to increase your muscle mass. And not only to do this, do you have to eat more protein. Protein, guess what? It increases naturally your GLP-1A secretion. So if you want to learn how to increase your GLP-1A, eat more protein. Eat more protein. It actually naturally increases the secretion of your natural production of this peptide in your own body without taking this crazy high dose that's in the semaglutide, Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, tirzepatide. You can do so naturally by increasing your protein intake. Also by exercise, especially weight training, resistance training, anything that you're forcing your muscles to work. This also increases your GLP-1A naturally. Another really big lever that almost nobody is talking about, besides just like, you know, actual foods like or supplements, you could take berberine, you could take alpha-lipoic acid, green tea, like these do increase the GLP-1A naturally. But what increases it even more is just overall improvements in your gut health. Yes, gut health. This has been shown to significantly increase the GLP-1A. And the way that it does is that when you get your gut healthy with the healthy organisms, the lactobacilli that you want, like Lactobacillus reuteri is an amazing example. It's one that's now been in the press recently, Akkermansia. There's many of them, Bifidobacterium. But when you increase the health of your gut, guess what it does? It helps you. It's a synergistic thing. They produce what's called short-chain fatty acids, or the SCFAs. These short-chain fatty acids increase your natural production of GLP-1A naturally. They also increase your overall gut health. It's amazing how much they can help. These are things like butyrate, acetyl acetate, for example. These are produced by healthy gut bacteria, which you can control. How do you control it? Really, really simple. You do my five things. You move your body, you get good sleep, you manage and optimize your stress, right? And you eat the right things. So, so simple. There's five simple things you can do that increases your gut health. And of course, you're going to try to eat gut healthy foods, right? The prebiotic foods with the resistant starches, the asparagus, the artichokes, the, you know, all the real nice fibrous vegetables, which you're not eating necessarily for yourself. You're eating for them. And when they get healthy, they help you. So gut health is paramount to be able to increase your own natural production of GLP-1A. And if you want more on this, I got so much more on gut health. I've done a bunch of podcasts. I actually take a certain mix of gut health supplements that have helped me tremendously over the last almost 10 years that I've been taking them. And I'm in the best metabolic health of my life. In my 50th year, as active and energized, and I'm increasing my muscle mass thanks to my gut health. Thanks to my gut health. And so if you want more on that, you can message me over there on Instagram, Dr. Thomas Hemingway. You can send me an email, I'll even give him my email. Heck, it's Aloha, A-L-O-H-A, Aloha Surf Doc, AlohaSurfDoc at Gmail. You can message me that way on email or on Facebook, Dr. Thomas Hemingway, Thomas Hemingway MD, what have you. I would love to share with you my specific regimen because it has been so helpful getting myself metabolically healthy, and it also increases this GLP-1A. So you don't have to deal with all these nasty side effects like we talked about, the resistance that occurs with it. So it makes it hard to ever come off of them. The Ozempic face. I didn't even talk about pancreatitis, but these GLP-1A agonists that are synthetic that you can take as medications, they can cause pancreatitis. They can cause thyroid cancer. Like, there's a lot of crazy stuff besides just feeling like crap and nauseous all the time and not wanting to eat real food because you don't really crave real food. I mean, you're reducing your calories, so duh, you're losing weight. But what I've seen in most people is that their overall nutrition is going down. They're not eating great foods. They're not eating very much calories. Their body is getting used to being on very low calories. And basically all diets that are basically built upon the premise of calorie restriction, they all over the long term slow your metabolism. So if you come off these agents, your metabolism is much slower and you're almost guaranteed to gain that weight back. And there was an amazing study done out of UCLA that I report in my book, Preventable, that talks about every kind of diet out there. And it summarized literally hundreds of studies on dieting. And most of the studies have been done on some variation of calorie restriction, which is kind of how we've always been told, right? You just eat less and you move more, eat less, exercise more. Well, look around. How is that working out? 7 out of 10 of us are overweight. And that's not casting blame or anything. That's just reporting the statistics. 40-some-odd% are obese. That number is projected to be over 50% by 2035. And I'm going to say this right here. We can change this. We can do something about it. You are not broken. You may think you're broken. Your doctor may tell you you're broken. Oh, you're 35 and your body's falling apart. Like BS, you are not broken. Your metabolism may be broken. And the cool part is you can fix that very readily. And attacking your gut health from the outset and the quality of foods you're eating, doing some resistance training, you know, weights of some kind, that's going to tremendously, positively affect your ability to build a healthy metabolism, which will keep you at an ideal weight for life. This is what we're all looking for. We're looking for being at this ideal weight for life without a medication causing it and causing us to lose muscle, which actually, interestingly enough, the studies are kind of leaning towards saying that it makes you age faster. It makes you age faster because you're losing muscle mass. One of the quickest ways to die younger is to lose muscle mass. That's how these older folks are falling and breaking hips and whatnot, because they're losing muscle mass. They're losing bone density because of the fact that they are not doing the protein intake. Most of us don't eat enough protein. They are not doing the resistance training. They're not exercising their muscles. And so when you lose muscle mass, you lose your metabolic, I would say, powerhouse, which is muscle, you're going to age faster. None of us want that. And so a couple other things you can do. Actually, healthy fats, believe it or not, healthy fats can also, they can also help with natural secretion of GLP-1A. Healthy fats can do this. It can happen. Healthy fats will cause healthy secretion naturally of your intestinal cells of the GLP-1A agonist through healthy fats like avocados, like coconuts, like, you know, these healthy fats that we can be able to have access that are single ingredient real foods, maybe real butter, ghee, tallow that you use to cook your food with. These real healthy fats can also increase your GLP-1A production. I talked about berberine. I talked about alpha-lipoic acid, getting your gut healthy because your gut makes short-chain fatty acids like butyrate, for example, that also increase your GLP-1A. Just so many things that you can do to naturally increase this. So why wouldn't you optimize all that first? And if you're somebody who does have type 2 diabetes, it's uncontrolled, and you need something like Ozempic to kind of get the ball rolling, go for it. Like, they're here for a reason, but I just don't want you to have to be stuck on it for life because you didn't do the other things. You didn't eat adequate protein. You didn't build up your muscle mass. That's what scares me. I just don't want you to struggle with metabolic dysfunction, because right now, sadly, 9 out of 10 of us have metabolic dysfunction. It is crazy. 9 out of 10 of us have this, but it can be changed, and it can be changed quite readily. That's the cool part. Doesn't take a lot, especially getting your gut healthy. Literally, this can happen in a matter of weeks to get it up to snuff and up to where you want it. It can be a few months. And for long term, yes, there is maintenance. You got to do maintenance, kind of like if you got a nice vehicle, you're not going to just ignore it and never change the oil, never put gas in it, never get your spark plugs changed. Of course, you're going to keep your high-end car rolling, you know, you're going to keep it going. It needs maintenance. And we also need that. We can't, it's not a one and done thing. You don't just, you know, get your gut healthy for a month, take some probiotic or whatever, and then just stop and go back to your old ways. No, that's not the way. I share with you in the book, Preventable, how to do this and how to do it simply and how to do it for the long term. So make sure you grab my book, Preventable, over there on Amazon. Dr. Thomas Hemingway, it's such a pleasure. It's such a gift to be here with you. Please message me over there on Instagram, Dr. Thomas Hemingway. I would love to share and help answer any questions about not only Ozempic and the weight loss drugs and so on, but any questions you might have. I've done so many podcasts covering similar topics about metabolic health. Like I said, I did a former one on Ozempic and Wegovy. And so feel free to check out those. I'm going to wrap up today's podcast because I don't want to get you too deep into the weeds, but I did share a couple of studies showing what happens when you stop these medications. You gain weight. It's just what happens. That's what the data shows, and it happens for a number of reasons. It happens because we're losing muscle mass. It happens because we're disconnecting the normal physiologic process between our gut and our brain, that super amazing, healthy, awesome nervous system called the parasympathetic nervous system, the rest and digest, which is responsible for how we can respond to stress as well. That's our breathing that can affect that. That's the vagus nerve. We are disconnecting ourselves from that when we take these medications long-term, and that is not a good thing. In the short term, we can see right away the heart rate variability is decreasing. Our stress levels increase. This is not awesome for our overall health. And there is a better way. There is a better way. You got to eat plenty of protein. Start your meal with protein. You got to pump up those weights. You got to do some form of resistance training. You got to eat high quality, real single ingredient food. You got to get your gut healthy. It can be done. It can be done simply. If you want help with this, feel free to jump on in and join my group. It's called Thrive, the Thrive community. The link is over in the show notes. It's over there on my Instagram profile. I'd love to have you there. We do live Zoom calls. There's an ongoing chat where you can ask me questions. So many great things. So jump on over there, join my Thrive community, grab my book, Preventable, keep following along my Instagram. I'm always making posts about these things. I'd love to help you so you can thrive and not simply survive. Aloha.